in Ksuvos. The parak really starts at the bottom of Tesvav Amid Beis, but I asked for Jared whether he was going to be covering that, and he said no, and he was true to that. So we're starting the parak at the bottom of Tesvav Amid Beis with the Mishnah. And this is going to be really an in-the-sugya type of a shir, trying to understand the Mishnah itself and the Gemara itself, with some takeaways that go beyond it, but really fundamentally in the sugya itself. So the Mishnah has two parts. The first part being a machlokes tanakama Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, or parent machlokes, about what constitutes proof that a woman was a besula when she got married, such that she should get the ksuva of a besula. And then the second half takes us into Migo and Pesha Asar territory, where the parak spends much of its time, the issue of a person who says something that puts himself in a bad legal position, but it's his own say-so, and then he says something that undoes that and his credibility, since he was the one who created the bad legal position in the first place, the case in the Mishnah being the case of somebody who says about his field, about which there has been no question, this field belonged to your father, and then I bought it off of him. As far as anybody knew, the field belonged to this guy, you know, since time immemorial. So he created the question of, wait a minute, do you have proof that you bought it? And therefore he's believed to say, yes, I did buy it. That's the second half of the Mishnah. So what I want to do is, in terms of the first half of the Mishnah, talk about this possible machlokus between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka about what constitutes evidence that a woman was a besula when she got married, and then switch into the second half of the Mishnah and talk about the difference between the Migo that we saw in the first parak, where a woman was accused of having covered up the fact that she was not a besula at the time of the marriage. And she said, no, I was actually raped after the Kiddushin, and therefore was a besula at the time of the Kiddushin. And believe me, Migo, because I could have said that I was just a Mukas Eitz, and this hurts me because it disqualifies me from a Kohen, so you should believe me. And there Rabbi Yeshua did not accept it, did not believe it. But on the other hand, in the beginning of our parak, he does believe the Migo of this fellow with the field. He says, I believe him when he says that the field was purchased. So why is Rabbi Yeshua believing one and not believing the other? Originally I had hoped that I would also get to in this Mishnah the part where they talk about the Kala going out with her hair wild or uncovered in some way at the time of the chuppah as evidence that she was a besula. Realistically, there won't be time in this shiur, but I do want to come back to it in the second shiur because I think it's a very interesting topic. So Mir Tzidam, next week we'll cover that. When we're supposed to be doing Tezayin Amid Beis, we'll still be doing Tesvav Amid Beis. But, you know, that's okay. All right. So the Mishnah itself you see in Source Aleph on the sheet, but basically in my run-up I more or less gave you the Mishnah. A couple of things, though, that are worth understanding here. The previous parak dealt with credibility at the start of the relationship. Now we're talking about credibility at the end of the relationship when they're getting divorced, or if he passed away, something between his estate and her regarding her besula status from when they got married. So the Mishnah begins, Aishas Armalosh and his Garsha, woman is widowed or divorced. He omeres besula nesasani. She says, I was a besula when he married me. And he denies it and says, no, you were a widow at the time. So, im yesh edim sheyatzas behinuma varosha parok suva samasayim. If there are witnesses that at the time of the wedding they had a hinuma, what is a hinuma? I gave you three options in source Bays on the sheets. Rashi says it is some kind of a veil that goes over her face. He connects it with the word tinuma, right, which we are familiar with, tinuma, misnamnim, and so on, some kind of a dozing type of a thing. Apparently she can fall asleep while she's veiled like that. It's tiring, the run-up to a wedding. There's a lot of stuff going on. Rabbeinu Chananel says that it is some kind of a crown, which, as I noted in parentheses, I wondered if this was related to the Yerushalayim Shel Zahav ornament that they had for the Kala. I don't know. I haven't seen anybody say that, but it just sounds very much like it could be. And then the Rambam on our Mishnah, who characteristically goes in an entirely different direction. Although I have to say, it makes sense with the language of Yatzes Behinuma. He says it was a litter. They carried her out on a litter to the wedding. So that makes sense. Yatzes Behinuma. She went out on a litter. Yeah, he done. So this is not, it appears, the chuppah. Because they talk about that with other language.
They don't use the language.
First of all, no, they use other language for the canopy, but more to the point, it wouldn't only be for a basula then. Right? It would be for everybody. So no, I don't think this is that. But also, there's other language that they use to talk about the chuppah. That is not consistent with this. So that's what the Tanakhama says counts as evidence, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka says af chilu klayot raya. Also, distributing klayot is evidence. What in the world are klayot? So Rashi says these are sweets that they gave to the kids, some kind of a parched grain, a caramelized grain. The Ra'avan in the Kovetz Shitos Kamoi. Says the local practice of kids, local practice in his day, which is 11th century, 12th century Germany. So he says they had a practice of kids throwing wheat kernels on the heads of the chassan and kala. So that comes from this. I don't know how that relates to non-Jewish practices of throwing rice, right? I don't know. But that's what he says. And he says, quote, also, I'm going to come back to that word also, that also works as a sign. The Shita Mekubetzes has a very interesting ha'ara on that. If you take a look at source Gimel, the first point that he has, Verosha Parua, that her hair is uncovered, which I said we're going to come back to, God willing, in the next year. But just note his language, Perish Hayuma Free and Rosh HaBesula, they made her head wild, Lahash Bicha Besa'ara. So that Davka, her beauty should be increased via her hair. And then he says, Af chiluk klayos, also distributing the klayot, he explains why this is such a chiddush. Perish avagav de lohavya milsa de is avida begufa isha. Even though this is something that doesn't involve her physical person, right? This is something that is external to her. And he says, v'apshar da'almananami mikriva avdahachi. It could be that at some point they would do this for the almana also. The simanim that were given earlier, he says the Rosha Parua, the Hinuma, these are associated with her directly. That's physically with her, and you're going to be more careful to make sure that it's only done with her. Whereas if you're dealing with Chiluk Klayos, like some guy shows up at the wedding and starts throwing or distributing the Klayos, and he doesn't know what he's doing, or he doesn't understand the significance of it, who's going to know? Right? And then years later, someone's going to say, yeah, I was at the wedding and so gave out the Klayo. She was a Basula. Who's going to know? Since it's not connected to her physically, anything could happen and there's no guarantee. So that's why the Shita Mekubetzes says, quoting the Likutei Gaonim, that this is a chiddush, that we're willing to accept that. I wanted to make note of something that is inherently problematic here for anyone who's been learning a Masechta called Ksuvos and is used to the fact that Ksuvos means Kasuv, that it is written. Why are you having a debate about whether she was a Basula at the time of the wedding or not? Why don't you just go check the Ksuva? Right? What's this all about? Right? So Rashi says, yes, sir?
It's obviously they don't have it anymore.
Right. So Rashi says the Shtar Ksuva is not around. Not that he's claiming he paid it off, but the Ksuva document isn't there. The Meiri says, as we're going to see on Tezayin and Medbez, I hope next week, that we could be talking about a place where they don't write a Ksuva. Because we do know that there are such places, and that's going to be a discussion, I hope, in the next year. Yeah.
Why can't we assume that it is the Sula herself who is Michal Klai to the children and not someone else? And then it's still in her.
It's an interesting idea. I've never seen reference to such a practice.
But also, Rashi doesn't say, like, someone else. He's just like, right, but anyway, Michal Klai has to have a good and she has a good book.
It would shock me to think that. It would shock me to think that she has that responsibility to start, you know, distributing klayot at her wedding.
I don't know, she can sleep, so maybe she has time for
that. Just the opposite. She can sleep. We're going to now have her do the klayot. What happens if she sleeps through the klayot part of the ceremony? I mean, it's a... Yeah, you're right. It's a... But it's a novel idea. No, I think you would agree. It's a novel.
I think it's four fetches, like sleeping, but yeah.
See, I would have said what the Shita Mekubetzes does is very nice in the sense that it explains the af. It explains what Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka says. Even this, why is he saying even this? Even this, because I would have thought no, this should not count. That's I think where he's going with this. Now the Meiri notes on this. I didn't bring it on the sheet, but the Meiri notes regarding this, that what if she was a besula who took a ksuba of 100 by choice? In other words, you have edus that she was a besula at the time of the wedding, the hinuma, rosh haperua, whatever it is. But what if her ksuba was 100 ziz anyway? She chose 100 ziz. You can't do anything about it at this point. What if she was in mukas eitz? Right? She was in mukas eitz, which we had the whole discussion back on Daf Yud Aleph about what a mukas eitz is getting, but assuming a mukas eitz gets 200 ziz, assuming she gets, mukas eitz gets 100 ziz, right? But she's getting all of the basula ceremonies at the wedding because she's in mukas eitz. She wasn't with somebody married before or whatever it is. So what are you going to do? So the Meiri says, yeah, but those are unusual cases, so we're not concerned. Until it happens, but that's his answer. So that's the first half of the Mishnah. Clearly we have things to talk about. Second half of the Mishnah. Umod Rabbi Yeshua ba'omer l'chaveru sada zu shel avicha ha'isal kachtia emena shu ne'aman. Like we said, Rabbi Yeshua admits, he acknowledges, this is a good migo, even though in the first parak, like I said, he did not accept a certain migo. He accepts this migo, where guy says, the field belonged to your father and I bought it off of him. We believe him, without evidence that he actually bought it. Because he was the one who created the problem for himself. As far as we knew, the field was his all along. But if there are witnesses that it belonged to his father, to the other guy's father, and then the guy says, yeah, but I bought it off of him, but I don't have proof. Then we don't believe him. Then we say that field belonged to this other guy's father. Right? Regarding this whole Migo thing, I just felt like since we spent time on it last year, when we discussed Shchenim, I did wanted to just bring back the Kovetz Shiurim, which you see in Sur Zalad. We're not going to spend time on the whole discussion that we had with the Ran and everything else, but just to point out the two different classic ways to understand Amigo. First, the really classic way, which is, as I bolded, Anan Sahadi, Sha'omer Emes. Right? When somebody says, I could have made a better claim and I didn't, so therefore you should believe me, it's just logical that we believe him, because we say, why wouldn't he have made the better claim on his own behalf? So therefore, we know that he's telling the truth. That was one way to look at it. The other way to look at it was that what we're doing is we're porting over the credibility of the other claim that he could have made, the claim that would have been better for him, had a level of strength to it. Even though he chose not to make that claim, we're going to borrow the credibility of that claim for him and give it to the claim that he actually is making. That's the idea. So here, I could have just said this was mine forever. That would have been a really solid claim. And no one was challenging it. So we'll treat him as though he had made that claim. And back then we discussed the nafka minas between them. I just wanted to mention that. Okay. Clear? Good? We have our Mishnah. All right. So what's the machlokas between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka? Is this a machlokas beyond the Likutei Gaonim that we saw on the word af? What exactly is going on? And the problem that we have here really is that there are three questions you could ask, and I put them on the sheet in source hay. Because this sugya becomes a very difficult sugya as it goes along, and I thought this might be helpful. So I have one problem, first of all, with the Mishnah. If I don't take the Likutei Gaonim's explanation about why Chiluk Klaios is unique, then I don't understand what the machlokes is between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. Tanakhama says, here are the signs of a besula. Hinuma, Rosha Parua. Along comes Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, and he says, oh, wait, there's also chiluk klayos. Was the Tanakhama not aware? Is this a machlokas in Mitzias? Like the Tanakhama says, at the weddings I get invited to, this is what they do for a basula. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka says, oh, wait, I go to weddings and they do this. They do klayos. Like, is that really what this is a debate about? Is it just a practical debate? Did the Tanakhama not know that this is something that they do? That's question number one. Clear? Question number two. Tosfos raises a concern with this whole concept of signs at the wedding. If you have multiple ways that people identify her as a basula, don't you kind of worry that people will become lax about doing any particular one? Right? If you have three different ways to identify a woman as a basula, so, yeah, all right, yeah, we're not going to do that one. That one, we're too busy right now. We don't have time for getting the litter together. The litter broke at the last wedding. We can't carry her. Whatever it is, we're not going to do that one. But don't worry, we'll do the Klyos one. And then somebody else doesn't bring the Klyos because they thought they're doing the litter, right? Or the crown, or, you know, whatever that is. Tosfos is worried. Maybe you're going to create a situation in which none of the signs end up happening. If you had one sign, then everybody knew this is what we do in order to mark her as a basula. Once you create multiple signs, Tosfos says, you might actually end up undermining her status.
Do we know about it? We didn't investigate it, maybe we should have. But about any other case in Halacha where you need some simani in order to know what the mitzvah is what. And there you know there's only one simani. That's all. Not more than that.
Aside from Ishtar.
Yeah, for example.
In other words, cases where we rely on...
Why don't you explain reality? Do you try to figure out what happened after? And then you can see what Tosfos means. Because I didn't understand really what Tosfos... I didn't feel that struggle.
Right. I mean, Tosfos is really bothered by it,
yeah,
but I can see why you wouldn't.
Maybe there is anything else that he doesn't bring, that usually you rely on your one siman. There's only one siman, and that's all. And here, 5,000, there's so many.
Right.
Right,
it's an interesting question. Do we have other cases in which the result of what we're going to do in Beis Din depends on simanim
of the event? I don't know.
Of the event. I mean, I think the answer is yes, but it's not enshrined in law the way it is here of what those simanim are. Like we have simanim. I mean, the closest analogy would be physical simanim for like adulthood or something like that, where we do have a set of recognized simanim.
Yes.
But that's not dependent on us. That's right. That's a natural phenomenon. That's
right.
Not something we do.
Right. No one will say, the moment rides a bicycle, then he becomes, he's a god. Like, no one,
Right. No, I'd want to think it through. I'm sure that there are that I'm just not thinking of, but I'm not thinking of any. I think there are that I'm just not thinking of.
So that's interesting to compare to see what happens, what goes there. There's really so many options, there's only one option. Maybe that's why it doesn't feel so bothered.
Right. Yeah, sure.
I don't understand Tosfos' point. If there was one siman only, then everything he's saying about the three could happen with the one. It would be worse. Like if the litter breaks and there's one, and you don't have the two backups, why would that be better than having more options?
Right. So I hear you, but I feel like to defend Tosfos, if you only had the one, if the litter was it, then you would say, we're not going to do the wedding until we've fixed the litter, and we're fixing the litter in order to make sure that it'll be there. You know, I think that you would say, like, this matters, because, you know, we're worried about what's going to happen to the ksuba otherwise. I think that would be Tosfos' answer. But I mean, this is psychological. It's all a question of what are people like.
It's a hard argument to make that more is better, like more is worse than less, but it still makes sense.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's a little bit counterintuitive at first that more should be worse than less. Correct. But on the other hand, human nature being what it is, we are a perverse species. Like that happens.
None of these things are chiyuvim in any way.
No, they're not chiyuvim. I mean, the wedding is a valid wedding without it. It's just that you know, she may run into trouble collecting her ksuba later.
The bride wouldn't let it happen.
She says, we're not having the wedding until there's a litter. It's like the videographer. We need the videographer. Yeah, I don't know.
So, there's room for one more question. So, we discussed at the beginning of the Chavrusa, at the beginning of the week. We read it differently, if I can share how we read the Mishnah.
Yeah.
Jared read it like you explained it, Rabbi.
Yeah.
But I offer maybe another reading, and maybe that can explain. If we say there is a possibility that the ketubah would be different the amount of ketubah would be different than the actual physical status of the.
In other words, like the Meiri's concern.
Like the Meiri's concern is that, that maybe we should say that what they're really discussing is not what was the physical status of the woman, but what kind of wedding.
That's. I'm trying to figure out what you were talking about.
Yeah. Matt, are you still?
No. Now I remember.
Because from the logic of the Mishnah, it's just like
you're saying that it's a basula wedding as opposed to a basula.
Yeah, exactly. And the raya is on the wedding because we're all only talking about how can we explain what wedding you are.
I think the language of the Mishnah really doesn't work when she says basula nesasani. You married me when I was a basula. It's an interesting idea, but I wouldn't go.
In the Mishnah in the previous.
Yeah, we're looking at it again.
We don't have the language of Bitulat Satani, right?
Because we're dealing with the end.
So
we're dealing with the end at the time.
Yeah,
but the moment.
I hear you. I'm gonna go by there because I don't have anything substantive to say other than I don't think so.
Okay.
So the third question is going to be a question within the Gemara. We're going to see in the Gemara in Yedzayin Amud Beis. The Gemara in Yedzayin Amud Beis is going to be talking about another sign that's done to identify a woman as a basula, and that was that they would massage oil or pour oil into the hair of the Talmidei Chachamim who are there at the wedding. It's sort of a penalty to the Talmidei Chachamim for showing up at a wedding. I don't know. We'll talk about a little bit what the siman was when we get there. But as part of the discussion, they're going to talk about this sign, and Rav Papa is going to say, I don't know what you're talking about, or he's going to ask, is it this kind of oil? And Abaye is going to be like, why don't you know anything about this? And then the Gemara is going to go on. And what is that story? Why is that interlude there in the Gemara? Like, you mentioned the sign. It's important that we know that this is a sign. Why do I need a conversation about Rav Papa's ignorance of the minhag? How does that contribute to overall what's going on? That's the third question that we need to get to. So what we're going to do is start with Rashi's read of the Mishnah and Yedzayin Amud Beis, and then we're going to see Tosfos. Rashi ignores the first two problems that we just mentioned, but he addresses the third problem. One thing you need to know in order to understand Rashi is that Rashi understands that we're dealing with two different locations. One location is Yehuda, the other location is Bavel. That's, you have to understand that in order to get anywhere in Rashi. The way Rashi reads the Mishnah, if you take a look at source Vav, Mishnah, Mitchilas Pirkin, Ha'isha shenis armala o shenis garsha, I added the word in brackets, be Yehuda. If a woman becomes a widow or is divorced in Yehuda, and then we have this question of what she was at the time of the marriage. The Tanakhama says we go based on Hinuma Rosha Parua. And Rabbi Yochanan Broka Omer Av Chilu Klayos Raya. Rabbi Yochanan Broka says Chilu Klayos also works in Yehuda. In other words, they're both talking about the same location and disagreeing with each other. Rabbi Yochanan Broka is saying this is also. Rashi doesn't seem to care that this seems to be a debate in practicality. Rashi just says that's the way to read the Mishnah. Now take a look at the Gemara as Rashi reads it. It's still in source Vav. Rabbi Yochanan Broka Omer v'chulei. Tana, b'Yehuda, the Gemara starts out by saying, in Yehuda, Raya. These signs in our Mishnah, as I added in brackets, count as proof in Yehuda that she was a Basula. B'Bav El Mai, what is evidence in Bavel? That's the way that he reads it. So, Amar Rav, derduge de mishcha areisha derabanan. He says, pouring oil on the heads of the rabbis at the wedding. That's the sign in Bavel. It was meant to be an incentive for Rabbanan to make aliyah. That's the answer. Amar le rapapal abaye, and then you get this story here. Oh, by the way, in terms of this oil practice and what in the world they were doing. So I brought you the Chasam Sofer in source Zion. I'm not going to read it inside. I brought it so you could see it, but I'll just explain it. The Chasam Sofer says, based on Rashi, that they had two unusual elements that they were doing here with the oil. Number one, they did it for the rabbis. The rabbis did not usually ornament themselves like this. You know that oiling one's hair in the Gemara, like in Tanakh, is considered to be luxurious. This is something that fancy people do. maybe comparable today would be like something like cologne or something like that. It's people who want to beautify themselves. So he says, rabbis, generally speaking, don't do the oil thing. So that would be unusual, number one. And number two, they had women be the ones to pour the oil on the heads of the rabbis. And that would really make it memorable. That's the way that the Chasam Sofer said.
I mean, there's another minhag of putting something on someone's head in a wedding, right? From Ephraimakle and the Chasam. So maybe that's also kind of playing with it also. Like the Chasam, there's something that you put on the Chasam's head for remembering Yerushalayim, and after when there's party and everything, that's good. You put shemen on the rabbi's head.
It's interesting.
So, like,
it's an interesting point. Yeah, interesting. Add to that the crown that she's got on her head, if that's what Enuma is. And everyone's got something on their head. So then you get Rav Papa. And I already mentioned what happened. Amalei Rav Papa la'Abaye, mishcha dechafifusa ka'amar mar. Rav Papa says to Abaye, is this massage oil that you're talking about? Amar le yasma, he says orphan. Rashi says he doesn't mean Rav Papa is an orphan. That would be an odd thing for Abaye, of all people, to say. He means orphan from minhagim. It means, how do you not know what the minhagim are, as Rashi reads it? And he says, lo avdalach imach, didn't your mother do this for the rabbis at the time? Like when one of the rabbis married off his son into the family of Rabba Bar Ula, Rabba Bar Ula Yasek le Lebrei Be'umer Rabbanan, or alternatively, is Rabba Bar Ula's son marrying the daughter of one of the Rabbanan, Vidardig Mishcha Reshad Rabbanan Bishas Maisa, and they did that Bishas Maisa. The Chasam Sofer says here that the two elements making it memorable are the fact that it's the rabbis and the fact that it's Shas Maisa. It's actually at this time in the that they're doing. It's not like done in advance. It's like everybody's hanging out there at the wedding and they're dancing, and suddenly someone comes over with the oil. Oh, it's the oil! It's the oil! And you know, there's a special thing that the band strikes up at the time to sing about oil. So the Gemara then comes back to our discussion and says, "Armalta mai, what about a widow?" Meaning in Bavel. And I don't understand what your question is. But now you do understand what the question is. And this is how we're addressing the problem of Rav Papa's story. If Rav Papa never saw this, it's not that Rav Papa never went to weddings. It means that they weren't always doing this. That's answering our question about what the Rav Papa interlude is doing there. It's there to say, this wasn't always done. It wasn't consistent. So therefore, what will be a sign for an almana in Bavel? To which they answer, Tani Rav Yosef, Armalta les la kisni. With the Armalta, they didn't have kisni. Kisni are klayos. Think pasa baba kisnin. They didn't have it. The thing that I can't answer is, shouldn't this question have been besulamai? Why did you suddenly switch to ask Armalta mai?
What is that?
No, you only need a siman for the basula, and then you know if she's not a basula, then she's armalta. You didn't need a siman for an almana. The whole point was, we have a siman to say she's a basula, and if she doesn't have a siman, then by default, we treat her as an almana. So, right. It's very difficult. This is not going to admit of an easy answer. It's just not. It's very strange. What you should have said was, basula, Bebavel, right? I added in the word Bebavel. This is where Rashi reads it. But Besula mai, and Tana Rav Yosef, Besula is la kisni. That's what you should have said. No.
The whole point
of the Rav Papa story is to undermine that and say, not everybody did it clearly because Rav Papa never saw it. So therefore, what is the sign of the, of a Besula wedding?
Oh, so
she's not in the month.
Yeah, that's the point. That's not just me. That's the standard read of Rashi. The Shita Mekubetzes brings it also.
No, you're wrong. People do it. You just don't know it.
If Rav Papa were sitting at the Beit Din and they said, look, there was oil, and he's like, I don't know what you're talking about, that's not a siman. Like, the whole thing, no, but it's a siman. He doesn't know.
According to your read, number one, I don't know what the Rav Papa story is doing there, other than comic relief.
Number two,
No, but number two, Number two, I don't understand why you needed to ask the question then. If you really believe that you've determined what the siman is, then what's our malta above Elmai at all?
In Yehuda, there's a siman for Betul, there's no siman for Almana. In Babel, there's a siman for Betul. What about an Almana? Is there a siman or is it there? That's how I read the question.
It's an interesting way to read it.
What's the siman and what do you read?
No, he's saying in Yehuda, they only have a siman for Basula, they don't have a siman for Almana. In Bavel, there's a siman for a basula. What's a siman for an amma? But we never even explored.
Yes.
And we never even asked the question about Yehuda. No one asked the question of, is there one for an amma in Yehuda? There was a given that once we said the one for the basula. I don't see that. Certainly not Rashi's read. So Tosfos tackles our Mishnah and Yedzayin Amud Beis in a way that also addresses the problems of our Mishnah. But in order to understand Tosfos, you need to recognize that we're now going to have three locations. Not just Yehuda and Bavel, but Yehuda, Bavel, and some unnamed place. And the Mishnah is actually talking about the unnamed location. That's the idea. It's not Yehuda and it's not Bavel. So if you take a look at Source Ches, I gave you the Gemara annotated to fit with the read of Tosfos. Ha'ishah shenisar mala ocean is garsha. A woman is widowed or divorced, but makom sheshmolo nizgar. Right? Some other place. Where it is? Not Yehuda, not Bavel. Place that shall not be named. He omeres besula nesasani. She says, I was a besula. Omer lo kiel amana nesasich. He says, no, you were an amana at the time. So if you have hinuma rosha parua, the ksuva is masayim in this other place. Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka is talking about Yehuda. Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka is not talking about this other place. Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, Omer bi Yehuda af chilu klayos raya. It's Yehuda specifically. How does Tosfos know that? Because of the beginning of the Gemara. The Gemara quoted Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, Omer v'chule, and Tana, it said, bi Yehuda raya. In Yehuda, this is a raya. This doesn't mean the Tanakama in the Mishnah. This means Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka's klayos. And so what it's saying is, the Gemara is saying, there is no machlokes Tanakama and Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. The Tanakama is talking about some other location. Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka is talking about in Yehuda. What Tosfos has as a problem, and he doesn't address it, is what does the word af mean then? No, but it's not and. It's Tanakama says in some other location that he's not explaining, the sign is Hinuma Rosha Parua. Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka says, in Yehuda, the sign is Klaios. He doesn't need a word af. No, he's not saying both, though, because there's no machlokes. You'll see as you go through in the Gemara, there's no machlokes.
It's all of them are af.
Two different, no, just that. That's part of, that's critical to Tosfos, that it's just that. Because Tosfos wants there to be only one simon. Yeah.
Is there a, this is a very, very basic question that I'm just, like, thinking anecdotally about. Is there any trend when the Gemara gives a quote from a Mishnah, two dots, and then the Gemara comments on it? Is there a trend that we, 90% of the time, when the Gemara is commenting, it's commenting specifically on those words?
So,
that's the way Tosfos reads
it. It depends on whether you have a v'chulu or not. If you have a v'chulu, then it's not about those words. It's about whatever came afterwards. If there's no v'chulu, the assumption is, it is, as Tosfos assumes
about
here, before, about those words.
Meaning Tosfos saying it's spit this and not anything before. Meaning,
yeah, because then you would have started your quote from before and said v'chulu.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's a funny thing, because, like, you read that and you think, like, well, I know that's some, like, Vilna Shas editor who put those words in,
right.
But apparently not. So the position of Tosfos is Rabbi Yochanan Broka is talking only about Yehuda, and Tanakama is talking about the unnamed place, and therefore the Gemara continues to say, but Bavel Mai, what is it in Bavel? And Rav says, oil on the heads of the rabbis. That's what they're doing there. And Rav Papa says to Abaye, I never heard of such a thing. And Abaye says, well, I don't know what's wrong with you. Like it happened in the marriage of Rabbi Ula's daughter or son or, you know, whoever that was. And then the Gemara comes back to it and asks, are Malta in Yehuda Mai? The question is, what about for an almana in Yehuda, right? Where Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka says, Klaios, the, why are you so sure regarding this for the, you know, in other words, if you're telling me that Rav Papa is not aware of the oil, in Bavel, Rav Papa's interlude shows that he's not aware of the oil, how can you be so sure about the Klaios in Yehuda? To which the answer was, because they're makbid there. The answer is Tanur of Yosef or Malta Les Lakisni, because they would not do the Klaios. They were much more careful than they were in Bavel. They were evidently not careful in Bavel regarding the oil, but they are careful here about the Klaios. That's the idea. If you look in Tess, I summed up Tosfos' answers to our questions. Number one, there's no machlokas Tanakam Rabbi Yochanan and Broker. They're talking about different places. Number two, he says, regarding the Mishnah, if there are multiple simanim, we don't rely on any of them unless it's clear that they are makbid. And number three, in terms of what Rav Papa's story is trying to show, they weren't careful about the oil, and therefore we will not, in fact, rely on the oil. That's the way Tosfos reads the sukkah.
Is the lack of the siman any indication at all for you?
Is the lack of a simon any indication? Yes. We're saying otherwise she's not able to...
There were no clothes. There was nothing.
Right.
She wasn't a basula.
Right. So what he's asking is what he's asking is how can you be sure if lack of oil in Bavel isn't a demonstration that she's an amana? Once we know that they're not so careful about a simon, maybe I should be concerned also regarding the Klaios. Maybe that actually explains the Armalta focus. He's saying, but wait a minute, she could be an Almana, but she might also be a Besula. So that's what he's fundamentally asking. So maybe that explains the Armalta focus in the question. I don't know. I have to go back and read it. Yeah.